Hello and welcome to another episode of The Humanist with friend Ben Cake.
What we're talking about is an emotion that feels like this would be a satisfying version of myself.
Today's conversation picks up where the last episode left off. So this is sort of a part two of our conversation exploring how do we know who we are and what is real, especially when it comes to knowing what we want to do with our lives.
Yeah, what duty do we have to the whole, and what duty do we have to ourselves?
That's right. We're asking deep questions on The Humanist. And shout out to Dale Woodfin for this intro music and Umphreys McGee for our outro music for this episode. When you are as a artist, as a creator, a writer, let's start with Rick Rubin a little bit. You know, do you agree with his premise, which is very popular? It's not original to him. He says that it's this idea of like our creation does not really come through us when we are really tapped in. It's coming from source. He uses that with a capital S. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that concept of creativity, that it comes through you as a vehicle, but it's not really, it goes way back, right? Elizabeth Gilbert talks about it in her TED talk, the daemon, and this idea of it not being Bob Dylan, you know, like a lot of artists will say it comes through me, but it's, I don't know where it came from. How do you experience that?
There are times, and you know, I think most of the times when I write, if I'm just hitting the marks of an outline or something along those lines, there's something, it's like following the feet chart in a dance, you know, those kind of steps, you know, yeah. 1, 2, and they go around in a pattern. And that's not real dancing, right? That's following the foot chart.
Okay.
And I think that at times it's when I find myself typing something that I didn't see coming. That's where you experience that. I don't know where that came from. I can't necessarily take credit for it because it just came up in the conversation. The way what we're doing right now, I don't know where this is going. I don't know what's going to come up next, and it could feel leaden, or it could be, oh wow, that's a cool thing. Let's riff on that. And so to that extent, yeah, it's about showing up, and it's about trying to kind of embrace those things and not worry or strategize too much about like, no, this is the right thing for my image, or this is the right thing that will get us an audience. I think that once you start to kind of try to do it through strategy in that way, you are sacrificing something else. You're sacrificing the ability to actually do something new or to channel in that way. You're closing down that option.
Are you familiar with experiencing flow? Do you experience flow very often?
I experience it the most when I'm close to the end of a project, because there is a sense of momentum. Flow for me is almost never comes in a planning stage. It almost never comes when I'm in the middle of something. It comes to when I see a possibility and things start to kind of take shape. And so I think that deadlines can help with that. You know, I can experience a flow state when I know something is due and I have to get to the end, but it always tends to be around when something's coming together or when it's going to be completed. And I see, oh, this will do it, you know, and I just need to do this, and then I need to do this, and that is kind of final chess moves of the game kind of feeling, where it's like, oh, and people start moving faster and stuff like that. And that's that sense of flow state to me. That's kind of what I picture is like, oh, I know what has to happen next. There's not that many other options left. And I've kind of left the freeform jazz phase and we've found a groove or whatever. And so, I definitely need to work on sticking with one metaphor or one kind of analogy for these. So, but yeah, that's how I kind of see it.
So in terms of this idea of trying to live an authentic life, let's think about, we can kind of wrap this up, this conversation up, but it's like, what compromises have you made? We don't have to use compromise. I think compromise can be used positively or negatively, even in the context of thinking about authenticity. What compromises have you made, and did they end up showing you a way forward that you hadn't previously considered? Have you ever made compromises that led you further into what we would say would be living a meaningful, purpose-filled, authentic life? Or do you think of like, did it lead you to feeling compromised?
I'm a big proponent of trying things. As I said, I spent the past 7 years trying out a new career because my move, I had to walk away from a 12-year network. And so, I am open to that. I think that that's not necessarily... in terms of compromise, I don't think of them in that way. I think about them of, let's try it this way. And then it becomes, if it doesn't work, we try something else. But I do think that it becomes... There's pragmatic compromise where... We're gonna do this for now because it's going to work. And then there's compromise because of a lack of faith in oneself, where you're actually kind of like, yeah, I can't defend what I believe because it hasn't borne out or something like that. And that's the tougher one because it feels like you're giving up on yourself in a way, or you're succumbing to, I'm the burden in this situation and I have to give up. I have to let go of what is holding everyone else back. And so I think that it depends on the frame. Does it feel like you're kind of abandoning something because of a lack of faith in yourself? Or is it just a pragmatic move for the greater good? And how you frame it has a huge effect on how you feel about it. To have to give up something because of lack of faith brings a lot of shame of, I wasted all this time. I'm kind of an embarrassment. Everyone knew this but me. Everybody could see this but me, or something like that. Whereas I'm going to make this change for the greater good for now because it will foster goodwill or it will help us get through whatever we need to do. That feels like... You hear a lot of people say, oh, I'm taking one for the team on this or something like that. And I think they're trying to frame it in that way, is I'm making a pragmatic change.
You do hear that.
But
yeah.
But with that, there's kind of built into that is this caveat of like, I'm doing this now, but I expect there to be the opportunity for other tweaks later.
Right? Yes, and I'm sacrificing. There can be a little bit of a victim mentality there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, of like, I see what I'm doing for you and, you know, and well, congratulations on you doing well, but, you know, I wasn't supposed to because I'm taking one for the team.
Yeah.
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 It exonerates you from even more failure.
Exactly. And an analogy that I've kind of talked about this before, but an analogy I like is anyone who's ever been to a bar in their 20s is also... been there at closing time and you walk out and you see two dudes yelling at each other, about to get in a fight, and their friends are holding them back, right? And they're like, yeah. Let me go, you know. secretly, neither of those dudes want their friends to let them go because then they have to fight. And some, I mean, yes, certainly there are people who are just looking for an excuse to throw a punch. But a lot of them don't want to be let go. And I think that sometimes taking one for the team is having the friend hold you back. And so there becomes this sense of safety of like, oh, well, I could have done so much. You know, it allows you to kind of indulge in this, oh, if I didn't have to do this, this, and this all day, I could do this. Same thing with holding down a day job when you have another career that you want to do. It's like, if I had all day to do this other thing, I mean, I'd be in a completely different place.
Yeah.
But that's the friend holding you back. And if you end up quitting that job and then just doing what you thought, trying to pursue what you thought, you're in a fight and you're going to get probably punched in the face a few times. And if that's worth it to you, then that's the fight of what you wanted to pursue. And that's exactly how it has to get done. But, and I think it's just healthy for anybody to ask, what stories am I telling myself? And what decisions have I made that have been the friend holding me back? And do I really want to go there and pursue that? Do I really want to launch this company? And I said, you know, if I didn't have to send my kid to this school, I'd have the startup capital or whatever it might be. How much of that is real and how much of that is the friend that's holding you back to allow you to fantasize about how things could be otherwise?
Wondering what Big Self School is all about? Well, check us out at bigselfschool.com and see what we can do for you with workshops or trainings. I don't like, in terms of trying to create a, like, to end this on a positive note, right? and maybe not people who are compromised and making excuses. It's like, how can we then, maybe if so, okay. So I would say you do some experimenting. You're willing to try some things and they may be really unusual things. I think that, you know, it would be fun to maybe unpack how you go about doing those at some point. And you know, and I too have been willing to like kind of jump in and try some things and maybe they do. It's like, because we don't always know what to do, it's like more okay if something didn't pan out because it was an experiment. I'm just trying some things. Nobody really knows. And maybe I have a little bit of freedom to try a new thing. Mm-hmm. And so I guess, you know, this idea of we can live a creative life, even if the thing we're doing, maybe not like I'm painting pictures or writing poetry or making music, but I'm participating, as Barry Michaels and Phil Stutz might say, I'm going to participate with the creator and be a creator of my life. Be generative.
Yeah.
Be pushing forward in a proactive way that's keeping me alive and maybe not compromised.
Yeah.
How can we do that? How can we live these creative lives and be okay with failing without shame?
Well, I think a big part of it comes into setting terms with yourself about what we were talking about earlier of what success looks like. If it is, why am I writing this 15th book? My first 14 didn't succeed. You're creating the benchmark that for this to be worthwhile, it needs to be commercially successful, or it needs to bring me fame, or it needs to bring me regard from peers or something like that.
Yeah.
That sounds fundamentally different from living a creative life because you're placing these constraints around it of, I want to be creative, but it also needs to be X, Y, and Z. If we're just saying, I want to be creative, then that's singing in a church choir.
No. I don't even mean like being creative in that way. I mean don't our efforts to be more self-aware, to overcome fear, to overcome shame, to don't they need to have results? Yeah, it's like, don't they need to bear fruit? If we're living in a, we're practicing things that, I mean.
Yeah, you know, I think that And this might be a bridge we have to build over the time, but I always tend to go back to the existential. We talked about that kind of thing that I had of, you know, what's the point of product market fit if it means you have to do something you never wanted to do? And I kind of...
Yes.
And yes. So, you know, as far as metrics, I kind of touched on it earlier, but my only metric is this a day I would want to live again? How do I want to live a day? And to that extent...
And let the results speak for themselves.
Certainly, there are pragmatic things. In order to do that, you have to think about sustainability. You know, it's not, oh, I wanted to get a massage and then do this, and I spent $700 on self-care. That might be a nice way to spend a day, but it's also not sustainable. So,
do you have an ideal day?
Yeah, sure. I mean,
what's it look like?
It looks, I mean, so far today is shaping up to be that. You know, it's, I've already, you know, gotten some exercise in, so I've kind of taken care of my health. I spend some time with my family, so I've taken care of my relationships. I've gotten to engage in some, this intellectual conversation. So I've kind of nurtured my mind a little bit, opened up my thinking. And, you know, I have a business meeting later. And so I've kind of, it's a pretty, it, all the food groups of an adult life are there. And so I think that, you know, as far as sustainability, as far as taking care of the things that make me feel whole, that's a good day. I can say, and it's Friday, you know, you want to go through life with the Friday just, feeling.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, to that extent, something along these lines, if I can take care of those things and keep exercising those parts of myself a little bit every day, that's the goal.
You did a lot this morning. I haven't exercised yet, so maybe I'll do a cold plunge or something and feel a little bit better about my metabolism.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and that I do not subscribe to, you know, the people who post, you know, how they wake up, you know, that's become parodied at this point. It's just,
yeah.
It's not really, I'm not kind of talking about it on those terms. I don't think that there is a universal. I think that each person has different metrics, and that's why I kind of that's why I think it's important, that, you know, when we're talking about something as big and as kind of enigmatic as authenticity, we have to acknowledge that the metrics are completely idiosyncratic.
Okay.
That's why I think that the judgment component, it becomes superimposing your metrics onto somebody else, or out of jealousy, using what you project their metrics to be and pointing out where they didn't hit them. And to that extent, like, because we can't agree on the same metrics, so much friction occurs.
Yeah. I guess what I'm, maybe we're not talking about the same thing when I'm talking about results. So we can, in some ways I respect that idea of certainly we're all full of assessments. That's what, you know, that's my coach speak. Some of them are grounded assessments, but mostly we're just constantly judging ourselves and others in little ways. I get that. But transformation coaching, which is, I guess, the name that we give the kind of, it's not transactional. I'm not giving you a how to in the coaching that I do with clients. It is hard to without fake marketing language about, like, you will get these results in this amount of time if you sign up for this program. Because I don't know the kind of effort they're going to be putting in. I don't know everything going on in their inner life. But in the end, I would think if they do apply themselves and they do hear themselves into awareness, that they're going to have some results. that they're going to like shift behaviors over time. So I would think that like with certain practices, leading an intentional creative life, such as I'm trying to define it, that hopefully it will bear fruit, and that there would, I like, maybe we do create fake ideal. We have idealizations, or we create culturally imposed, unrealistic metrics that then like lead us into the cycle of like feeling like failures all over again. But I would want people to, in creating a life. It's like life is short, right? And we take it so seriously, and we're always so scared, and we're always so resource driven. Like, but like it's not going to last very long, right? And no one's going to remember any of this. So I would just encourage people to try a few things out and hope for better results.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
I there's no way to disagree with that. But to some degree, going back to the anecdote you had and with the conversation with Owen Wilson and Rick Rubin, where they just drew an arrow at luck. You know, things took off. Or, you know, you look at people, you know, who have certain creative careers, and they say they're having a moment, or, you know, there become peaks and valleys in a creative career. And I think that those are based on macroeconomics. They're based on social trends. They're based on a lot of different things that are out of your control. And so,
and shouldn't be a metric of succeeding.
Yeah.
Even living a creative life.
Yeah. And so,
okay.
I think that, you know, you were kind of talking about your coaching, and it kind of becomes about, I think, engaging in the process of actually doing something. I think that most people feel stuck when they're thinking more than doing, or they're talking themselves out of things, or they're trying to peek around corners and say, well, if I did that, that, and that, and that, could I guarantee some kind of outcome? And because of that uncertainty and the fact that it's hard to guarantee a particular outcome, they end up disqualifying themselves. And so you line up enough of those disqualifications and you feel stuck because you're not doing anything for out of the things. It just doesn't seem feasible. And so kind of getting people started to do something and allowing them to have the possibility, you know, my father-in-law has this thing that you have to be playing in the street to get hit by luck. And that's that kind of component of like
just showing up.
You have to do something. You can't just perseverate or debate or strategize. You have to kind of show up and do the thing. And I think that manifests itself in, for some people, writing the 15th book, or or for other people, it's, no, I'm going to open a parakeet store, or whatever it might be, that those different vast departure explorations of like, that could be cool, because you don't know.
Until you try,
yeah.
I love it. Well, this is just the beginning of our conversations along these lines, and, you know, we're just kind of like, there was no script. There was no, we're defining our terms as we go. And I hope that the end result is that this authenticity that we're bringing will open up like ways of thinking and different ideas, so that in the end, you might feel a little more encouraged to not live in shame and fear, I think would be a good benchmark for me.
We were talking about kind of getting out of a comfort zone and embracing discomfort. And that's exactly kind of what some of this conversation is that fumbling is an example of, you have to do something, you have to get started somewhere. And these explorations, these rough drafts of any kind of pursuit are the necessary step, and it can feel awkward, but
then there's magic that can happen too.
Exactly.
Hey, y'all, I just want to share with you an exciting event coming up that you will want to be a part of. May 31st, the Whiteboard team is hosting May Day, a one-day event in Chattanooga, Tennessee for tired creative leaders and entrepreneurs. A theme among many of our creative peers is loneliness, and we'd love to create some space for solace and encouragement. So if you or someone you know have had some hard knocks the past few years, are trying to navigate the future with wisdom, and just looking for some camaraderie, well, we'd love to host you. So if you lead a marketing team and you know your team is tired, well, we'd love to host you too. Big Self School will be there. That's right, Dr. Shelley and myself, Dr. Chad, and others will be guiding the day. Because creative work, it can be wildly challenging, but it's some of the most critical work in the world. So register at the link in the show notes or simply go to maydaymayday.live. That's maydaymayday.live.